Hi, this is May the 29th, 2004, in San Antonio, Texas, at the Army Nurse Corps Association Convention. And I am Kara Buick interviewing Marge Canfield. So let's just start with where you were born and raised.
I was born in Detroit, Michigan, mm-hmm. 1930, and grew up in Detroit, went to school in Detroit, and went through nursing school. Mm-hmm. St. Mary's Hospital and Providence Hospital in Detroit. It was a school of nursing then, uh-huh. not a degree program.
Okay. So did you live at the hospital or did you
live
at home?
Oh, no. We lived at the hospital mm-hmm. because we worked from the time we first went in. Uh-huh. I mean, we worked on the wards as nurses uh-huh. from the very moment we started there. It wasn't like going to school for, 6 months or something and then starting to work. Uh-huh. We started working immediately on the wards, uh-huh. and after 6 months, then we could go on evenings and nights, believe it or not.
Wow. And that was probably 48, 49?
48, I went, yes, and it was a three-year program.
Uh-huh. And so you'd grown up, you were born just in time for the Depression.
Right.
Do you remember any of that?
Not really, mm-hmm. no. Uh-uh. Uh-huh. I was a little too young for most of that.
Mm-hmm. And what about World War II?
I do remember that my father worked for the WPA, uh-huh. and things were a little tight at that time, mm-hmm. but we were never really deprived of anything, mm-hmm. and I had a good life.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then what about World War II? Did anybody in your family serve in World War II?
Oh, I had, just a cousin. Mm-hmm. Most of the cousins there were still a little bit too young for that. Uh-huh. And my father was drafted but did not pass the physical, so he didn't go.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So. Do you remember much about the war?
I do remember rationing, mm-hmm. for instance, meat mm-hmm. and butter and tires and gas and shoes. Mm-hmm. And we saved all things like all the tin cans. We had to open at both ends and clean and flatten them to save all the metal and mm-hmm. Things like that. Yeah. I do remember most of that part of it. Uh-huh. Yeah. And in school, we did a lot of things like knitted squares for afghans mm-hmm. for the soldiers, and then we would submit all the squares and somebody else would put them all together. And we bought the stamps for the savings bonds. They mm-hmm. sold stamps for 10 cents and you'd fill up a book mm-hmm. of stamps, and when you got to 1875, then you got a bond. Mm-hmm. Those sort of things mm-hmm. Children were engaged in.
Right.
But everybody did their bit for the war effort mm-hmm. in those days.
Mm-hmm. When did you decide you wanted to be a nurse?
Oh my goodness, from the time I was real little. Uh-huh. As a matter of fact, we were on welfare and I had my tonsils out in the big city hospital. Mm-hmm. And I can remember how great the nurses were, and I think that's when I first thought that I might want to be a nurse. Uh-huh. And so I never changed my mind. Uh-huh. And then during World War II, I had a distant cousin who was in the Cadet Nurse Corps. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided that I wanted to be an Army nurse. Uh-huh. Of course, by the time I went into nursing, they didn't have the Cadet Corps anymore. Right. And that was 1948. Uh-huh. But I still had it in my mind that I wanted to be an Army nurse. Uh-huh. So when I graduated, I went down to the Army recruiting, but I wasn't 21 yet. Mm-hmm. And in those days, you had to be 21 in order to take state boards. Uh-huh. And the Army wouldn't take you until you had your state boards. So right. I had to wait. I graduated in February and I had to wait till July to take state boards. Mm-hmm. And then I came in the Army in November. Mm-hmm. Came to Fort Sam Houston for basic. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even have uniforms. We drilled in our civilian clothes because they were changing over to the taupe uniform. Uh-huh. And they didn't have them in quartermaster yet. So we were all out there marching in our saddle shoes and poodle skirts and things like that. And we lived at Fort Sam in one of the buildings where there were classrooms. but there were, I think, 18 of us to a room.
Wow.
And that took a little bit of getting used to, but it did give us a good taste of Army life for the enlisted people, because
mm-hmm.
it was like living in a barracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had a little cot and a small locker and a dresser, and you had to line everything up just right. Your pants, bras, everything had to be rolled and put in the drawers just right.
Wow.
And,
was that your first time away from home?
Yes.
For an extended period?
Well, yes. I, of course, when I was in nursing school, I lived at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, that was my first time away from home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But it was a great experience,
uh-huh.
you know, meeting a lot of different people. And
mm-hmm.
We had a very short basic course. It was, of course, during the Korean War in 1951. And they shortened basic. We didn't go to Camp Bullis. We
mm-hmm.
just learned very basic things like how to salute and how to march and those
mm-hmm.
sort of things.
Uh-huh. And were you officers at that point?
Yes. Most of us were second lieutenants.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the older girls that had had more experience in nursing came in as first lieutenants.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we might have had one that was a captain.
Uh-huh.
But most everybody was a second lieutenant.
Uh-huh. And what was your pay like?
I think it was something like $239 a month.
Mm-hmm. Was that more or less than you would have made working in a hospital back in Michigan?
Well, at that time, I had done some private duty and I was making like $8 a day.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't a registered nurse yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was a graduate nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, actually, it was pretty comparable, I think.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But we didn't need much money in those days either.
Yeah.
We didn't pay room and board and things
uh-huh.
like that in basic, and
uh-huh.
so the money went pretty far.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us a clothing allowance when the uniforms did come in, and we bought uniforms, but we had to go downtown and buy them.
Mm-hmm.
There were several clothing stores in San Antonio, like Josky's sold uniforms,
mm-hmm.
and there were two other military clothing stores.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought them through the civilian market. Mm. So we finally got some uniforms before we did graduate.
Uh-huh.
But we were so green, and we had to wear these brown shoes with a little Cuban heel, and we all bought them at Josky's. And our first inspection, the officer that was inspecting us just cracked up because all the brown shoes had little balls at the end of the shoestrings, which were not what the Army required, but we didn't know any different. Well, that several funny things like that happened.
Uh-huh.
We were, but the basic class was an experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what did your family think when you joined the Army?
Well, I think they were pretty proud. They were surprised,
mm-hmm.
even though for years I'd said I was going to be an Army nurse. It wasn't until some papers went to my home
uh-huh.
that were addressed to lieutenant.
Uh-huh.
And my mother called me up. I was still living in the nursing quarters because I was working in the operating room and on call.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "What is this?" And I said, "I told your mother that I was going to join the Army." But no, they were very supportive.
Uh-huh.
And very proud.
Uh-huh.
So. Yeah. So my first duty station was at Camp Carson, Colorado,
uh-huh.
in those days. And that was, I went there in December of 1951.
Mm-hmm.
And worked on Med-Surg, but then they closed the TB section at Fitzsimmons.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted to redo the whole thing, so they sent the TB patients down to Carson, so we had to open up a lot of wards.
Uh-huh. And that's tuberculosis, right?
Tuberculosis,
okay.
Yes. And temporarily, we mm-hmm. took in all those patients.
Uh-huh.
And so I worked on the TB wards.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, the nurses that worked night duty had to cook breakfast for all the patients. And you had one nurse, like I had maybe six TB wards.
Mm-hmm.
And you had one corpsman on each ward, so
mm-hmm.
We had ambulatory patients, though, that would help us mm-hmm. serve breakfast, but that was one of the duties of the night nurse, was to cook breakfast for all those patients.
And what did the corpsmen do? They helped.
Enlisted, yes. Mm-hmm. They were enlisted people. And in those days, they weren't allowed to give medications or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So the nurses gave all the medications and passed the nasogastric tubes, because we used to have to do tests on the gastric juices for TB frequently. Mm-hmm. And so you'd line up all the patients, and some of them had been there so long they could put their own tubes down. Some of the patients could. But you had to do that before breakfast, so then cooking breakfast was not the most pleasant thing in the world after having to do all that. And those TB patients were pretty clever in how they managed to get things that they weren't supposed to have, like liquor, and stuff. And some of the hiding places were really ingenious. They would take the drains off of the showers and tie a string around the bottles and drop the bottle down into the shower drain, and put the drain back on.
Wow, who would have thought?
Well, they would be patients for months and years. Mm-hmm. And, they knew all the tricks of the trade. Uh-huh. But after the TB patients left, I really wanted to be an operating room nurse, because I had done that in civilian life. Mm-hmm. And I did go to the operating room and work for, probably about 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then two nurses were assigned that had operating room MOSs, which mm-hmm. is military occupational specialty. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't been into it a year yet, so I didn't have the MOS, so I had to leave. Mm-hmm. And they needed nurses in obstetrics. Mm-hmm. So I went to obstetrics. Mm-hmm. And actually, that's what I did most of my Army career till I went to Vietnam. Uh-huh.
I guess you said you didn't have the MOS yet. Did you try to take more courses?
I did.
To do OR nursing?
Well, no, because I had gotten into OB. Uh-huh. And I really got to like it.
Okay.
And eventually I got the OB MOS. Mm-hmm. So until I went to Vietnam, that's what I did, mm-hmm. was obstetrics.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you at Camp Carson?
About 2 years. And mm-hmm. then I went to Japan, mm-hmm. up on Hokkaido, the mm-hmm. northernmost island in Japan. Mm-hmm. And of course up there we did everything. It was a small hospital. Uh-huh. So we had a small OB department. So I did med-surg nursing. Well, it was a combination. We had psychiatric patients, med-surg, uh-huh. Men, women, and we did OB, so did a little bit of everything mm-hmm. while I was up there. Mm-hmm. And it was a pretty cold country up there. Mm-hmm. About 8 months of the year you could ski. So just about everybody took up skiing, uh-huh. people who had never skied before. So we always had nurses and doctors and corpsmen running around with casts on arms and legs and things like that. But we had a commander who was a skier, so he made sure transportation was available for anybody who wanted to go to the ski slopes every day. It was only like 15 minutes away. Uh-huh. So that was probably I was up there about a year.
Mm-hmm. And where were your casualties coming from?
Korea.
From the war?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we had, a lot of casualties from accidents in Japan. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we had dependents, too, up mm-hmm. there. We had the 8th Cavalry out at Camp Crawford, so we uh-huh. took care of all their wives and children and things like that. Uh-huh. So, uh-huh. But they were going to close that hospital mm-hmm. Before too long, and they needed an OB nurse down south at Camp Zama, mm-hmm. which was outside of Yokohama. So I got transferred down there and spent the rest of my time down there working in the OB section. They had a big mm-hmm. OB section there. Mm-hmm. So I was in Japan about 2 years. Uh-huh. And then I came back and went to Fort Belvoir, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And again, I was in OB. Mm-hmm. And we were in the old cantonment type hospitals. And it was pretty depressing in those places in those days. The long dark hallways and uh-huh. and there were a lot of cracks in the floors and the walls and stuff. And it wasn't as clean as you would really like. But they built a new hospital at Fort Belvoir, and we moved into that while I was there, and that was beautiful. And that is now the oldest new hospital in the Army Medical Department, and they're tearing that hospital down now and building a new one. But I can remember moving into what was then the new hospital, and, uh-huh. and it was wonderful, all the equipment we had. And, uh-huh. and I left there, in 1957, mm-hmm. I came down here to Fort Sam again for a course they called Ward Supervision and Teaching. Mm-hmm. And that's no longer in existence, but at that time it was a 6-month course. Mm-hmm. And they taught us a lot about statistics and history of the Army Medical Department and how to write up certain actions and how to solve certain problems and things like that in mm-hmm. that course. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was sent to a place called Tooele, Utah. Mm-hmm. It was an ordnance depot, and they had a hospital there, and it was staffed by civilian nurses. Mm-hmm. But somebody discovered that they really didn't have much of a patient load, mm-hmm. and the civilians were putting in for overtime, and mm-hmm. so they sent people up there to really look into it and found out that they didn't really have much in the way of a patient load, so mm-hmm. they sent some Army nurses in, and the hospital closed shortly after that, mm-hmm. and we ran dispensaries. We ran 3 dispensaries there. Mm-hmm. One in the main clinic building, one down in the industrial area, and one 17 miles away in the desert called Deseret, and that's where they stored the mustard gas and G gas and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we had 3 nurses there, uh-huh. and one in each of the places. Uh-huh. And it was a rather isolated assignment, but there are always good things you can find to do, like the newspaper in town advertised for chaperones. They were going to run a ski school for children 8 to 15, mm-hmm. and they needed chaperones on mm-hmm. Saturdays to go on the buses with them, so I volunteered for that. Uh-huh. I was off every other weekend, so I got to go up to Brighton and Alta uh-huh. with the children, and I only had to chaperone on the bus because once we got up there, the ski school took them over. Uh-huh. So I was on my own and I could just ski. Uh-huh. But it didn't matter where you were assigned. You can always find something interesting, something good about uh-huh. it to do. Uh-huh. Professionally, it was not very satisfying. Because uh-huh. all we did really was mostly put Band-Aids on and mm-hmm. do physicals and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I stayed there for about 2 years. Uh-huh. And I asked to go to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe they felt sorry for somebody who'd been in that assignment. So I went to Hawaii in 1959 uh-huh. to OB, uh-huh. of course. And it was a very, very busy mm-hmm. OB section uh-huh. there. And I stayed there for almost five years. And I did go to school to the University of Hawaii while I was there. I took classes. Mm-hmm. And
was that to get the degree?
Yes.
The R, uh-huh. the 4-year baccalaureate?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Did that take long?
I've never really completed it. I retired before I got that done. Would only take 1 or 2 classes
uh-huh.
And an assignment, but Hawaii was a great assignment
uh-huh.
because we were so busy mm-hmm. on OB, and I worked permanent nights most of the time, mm-hmm. and was busy all the time. Mm-hmm. So professionally, as far as obstetrics went, I mean, it was a really good assignment.
Uh-huh.
And
was it what you thought it would be, off duty?
Yes. Well, in those days, of course, there were no freeways mm-hmm. in Hawaii. They were just building the Hilton, which was the tallest mm-hmm. hotel there. Mm-hmm. And the only other hotels on the beach were the Ala Moana and the Royal Hawaiian. Mm-hmm. And the little army area down there.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't expensive living there at all, because you could go to the beach for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go sit outside on the beach and hear all the entertainment from the hotels for nothing.
Uh-huh.
And clothing, well, you wore muumuus or shorts all the time, and you didn't need any heavy clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great assignment mm-hmm. for families as well as for single people, because
mm-hmm.
there was so much to do that really didn't cost you anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I was there, like I said, for almost 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time I took leave was to study for a final exam.
Mm-hmm.
And then just before I left, I did take 30 days leave and went to India mm-hmm. and went to Thailand and went to Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a free flight, courier mm-hmm. flight through the Air Force.
Uh-huh. Had you always kind of had a bug for traveling?
Oh, yes.
What was
yes.
that? Did you get that in the Army, or did you have that before you joined, maybe?
No, I think it was after I joined the Army, and
uh-huh.
yeah, I tried to take advantage of the opportunities whenever I could.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I was there, like I said, 5 years and saved up all my leave, so
uh-huh.
I had an opportunity to take this trip and
uh-huh.
and took it. And a lot of people did that. It uh-huh. was a good place to get a hop to mm-hmm. different places.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I left Hawaii in, oh gosh, 1964
mm-hmm.
and came to Fort Hood, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody said, oh no, not Fort Hood. But it was a great assignment.
Uh-huh.
We were again in an old cantonment type hospital.
Uh-huh.
And anybody who's been to Texas know that we have a lot of crickets at certain times of the year here.
Mm-hmm.
And we even had trouble keeping them out of the baby's cribs in OB.
Oh.
The hospital was so old that we couldn't keep all the bugs out.
Mm-hmm.
But we were in the process of building a new hospital at Fort Hood.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting. I got to order a lot of equipment and things for the new OB section
mm-hmm.
and finally moved into the new hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there, oh, I guess about a year
mm-hmm.
and I volunteered to go to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. And so you're obviously, this is a career path by this
right.
point. You're not just joining the Army for a couple years.
No, no.
Not a little side job for a while.
No, I decided that this is what I wanted to do and uh-huh. and stayed in.
When do you think you decided that? Was it pretty early?
Probably when I was in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I did apply for regular Army.
Mm-hmm.
And was accepted into regular Army.
Uh-huh.
So I knew this was going to be my life's work.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, and never regretted it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you kind of wanted a career first. I mean, did you think much about a career? I guess in the 50s, a lot of women kind of did a job and then did something else, or cleaned house, or made doilies or something, I guess. But you decided you wanted a career.
Oh, yes.
A professional
uh-huh.
career.
Right. Yeah. I loved nursing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
uh-huh.
yeah. Uh-huh. When I went to Vietnam, of course, there wasn't much OB
right.
over there. So I went over with a unit that went to the 91st Evac Hospital in Tuy Hoa,
mm-hmm.
and it was a new hospital. So all the nurses went over as a group,
mm-hmm.
and the hospital was not quite ready when we got there.
Uh-huh.
So we did a lot of things like paint,
mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And get things ready for the first group of patients. And we finally opened up the hospital, and some of our first casualties were actually civilians and POWs, Vietnamese POWs. And then we started getting casualties and American casualties.
And why did you decide to volunteer to go to Vietnam?
Well, I just felt like I was making the Army my career, and that was part of my duty, was to go wherever they needed people. And I guess I wanted to be part of taking care of the wounded. So, and when I went to Tuy Hoa, then I was put in intensive care, which was a little different from obstetrics. It was recovery and intensive care. So that was a real new experience.
What kind of preparation did you get for that?
None. It was OJT. Well, of course, in OB you run into all kinds of things. You use, you know, we had cases where we had to use respirators and all kinds of emergencies. So that was a little bit of preparation. But of course, I had never taken care of some of the wounds that we got. And but everybody was very helpful. And there were a lot of young nurses on the staff who had been working in trauma centers. So everybody helped everybody else. I'd only been there, about 3 months when I got transferred, because they didn't want everybody to what we call DEROS, is you know, go home at the same time and leave the hospital with another whole new staff. So they started transferring people out and then transferring other people in, so everybody would be spaced out and leaving and arriving at different times. So I went up to Pleiku in the Highlands to a surgical hospital, the 18th Surgical Hospital. And I was chief nurse at that hospital. But it's in a small unit. I mean, you do everything. It's not an administrative job. So I worked mostly in the area where we, it would be like the emergency room, where we received all the casualties and did the initial care prior to surgery, pre-op care, and that sort of thing. And we took care of a lot of casualties and a lot of malaria patients. We had quite a few malaria patients. And then the 71st EVAC was being built up there in Pleiku. When that opened up, they decided to close the 18th Surge and make it an all-male unit.
Why did they decide an all-male unit?
They wanted to send it up north. And could I have a little water? They thought that having it an all-male unit would make it easier, since they were going quite far north and there were no facilities already set up for them. And so they wouldn't have to have different facilities for women and for men. Apparently that didn't last too long with an all-male unit, and they did send some women up there. But by that time, those of us who were at the 18th Surge had been farmed out to other units. I went up to the 71st EVAC temporarily and worked night supervision until they needed me down at the 3rd Surge, which would be in December. So I spent about 5 weeks, 6 weeks up there at the 71st EVAC. And that's when there was an operation called Docto, and we had so many men wounded and killed. And we got in just about all the wounded from that operation, and we were going in the emergency room 24 hours a day. And some of the doctors just didn't get any rest at all. Fortunately, we were able to get a few hours rest at a time and then go back and work some more. But it went on for days and days, mm-hmm. just bringing in the wounded. They weren't able to get to them right away, so some of the wounds were pretty old. Uh-huh. There were a lot of head wounds, a lot of chest wounds. Mm-hmm. And it was a pretty rough time. Mm-hmm. In fact, we were doing quite a bit of major surgery even in the emergency room because the operating rooms were all full. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest operation that I'd been associated mm-hmm. with since I'd been in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the wounded, then we, as soon as we got them stabilized, were air evac'd to other places, mm-hmm. but the initial care was done at the 71st Evac. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in December, I went down to to Dong Tam, mm-hmm. and it was the third surgeon. It was one of the MUST units, mm-hmm. the inflatables, mm-hmm. And we took care of a lot of Marines and Navy down there too, because mm-hmm. it was in the Delta, and so there were a lot of the Navy men around.
Uh-huh. Was that hospital very different? Or how were the supplies that you had, or maybe the equipment, was it very different in the MUST or than?
Well, of course, all the units, the wards and the emergency room were all inflatables. Mm-hmm. The operating rooms were, and X-ray were more permanent type, but they were like metal buildings, mm-hmm. but not inflatable. Mm-hmm. And they were air conditioned, which mm-hmm. was nice when it was working. But of course, anything could pierce the mm-hmm. inflatables, and that happened mm-hmm. quite often, and particularly in 1968 in Tet. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were mortared like every night mm-hmm. during the whole Tet. Mm-hmm. So we would evacuate our patients, mm-hmm. those that were stable. Every afternoon before it got dark, we would have choppers would come in and we would load the patients on there, as many as we could, and get them out of there. Mm-hmm. If a patient that was on a respirator, for instance, we couldn't move.
Right.
So we would have to put some of these patients just under the bed. Uh-huh. And the nurses and corpsmen would be crawling around on their hands and knees taking care of patients. And fortunately, we didn't have any patients wounded or any nurses. We had two casualties, and that was two lab technicians who decided that they wanted to see what was going on instead of taking care and going to the bunker, and they had some minor shrapnel wounds. But we had 52 direct hits on the compound mm-hmm. during that Tet period, mm-hmm. and fortunately nobody was injured.
Mm-hmm. Did you really think about that? I mean, did you feel scared, or were you?
Oh, well, yeah, you felt scared. Mm-hmm. you had to be, mm-hmm. But I don't know, we really just kept working. Mm-hmm. We could, when we got the patients evacuated, we would go to the bunkers. Mm-hmm. And patients that we didn't get out on evac that we were able to take to the bunkers. Mm-hmm. We had bunkers built outside of each ward. Uh-huh. And we would put some of the patients in there. Mm-hmm. And pre-op and the receiving ward, people would just get underneath the tables or whatever we had there, mm-hmm. and as soon as there was an all clear, we'd start getting patients in again, mm-hmm. and everybody came to work. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever had to call and ask somebody to come in. Mm-hmm. As soon as they heard the choppers, everybody would run and want to help. Mm-hmm. In fact, I used to have to make some of the staff leave to go home and get some rest so they could come back when the next group uh-huh. came in. The cooperation was just tremendous. Uh-huh. Nobody ever complained about a thing. Uh-huh. You know, it didn't matter how many hours they had to work. or under what conditions. Nobody ever complained. Everybody was willing to be there 24 hours a day if necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you didn't have a day after day after day of mm-hmm. this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would have, they would be having an operation someplace, and we would get the casualties in, and then maybe you'd have 24 hours
mm-hmm.
to get those people taken care of, and then you'd get another
mm-hmm.
bunch of patients in.
Mm-hmm.
But during that TET period, we were pretty much mortared every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to get the patients out as quickly as we could, as soon as they were stable.
Uh-huh.
So.
And what was your position at this hospital?
I was chief nurse.
Chief nurse here?
Uh-huh.
So what was your rank by that point?
Well, I was promoted there to lieutenant colonel.
Uh-huh. And you're probably in your mid-30s? So you were...
Well, I was 30,
by that point?
38.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're older than most of the nurses that
you
had?
Oh, yes.
And how did that work? I mean, did you feel
it
you
worked
were...
fine.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We all got along very well.
Uh-huh.
Some of the nurses actually had very little experience. They had been in the student nurse program, and they
mm-hmm.
had an obligation, and they hadn't been on active duty very long before they came to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
But they were all terrific.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them seemed to, fall to pieces or anything. They were always there when they were needed
uh-huh.
and did a really wonderful job.
Uh-huh.
So, and we all lived in the same quarters, and in fact, during TET, we all slept in the same bunker.
Yeah.
So everybody got pretty close.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So it was a really great experience.
Mm-hmm. No problems with anything?
No.
Or did you have any kind of issues you had to deal with as chief nurse, maybe morale or
no.
any kind of problems?
No. When it was quiet, everybody, partied some.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big courtyard sort of thing, and everybody would gather there and listen to music.
Uh-huh.
Just about everybody had tape recorders
uh-huh.
in those days. So everybody shared their music with somebody else, made tapes and
uh-huh.
No riotous parties or anything like that, but just
uh-huh.
get-togethers and talk mm-hmm. and listen to music and
uh-huh.
things like that, play cards.
Mm-hmm.
And we always had jigsaw puzzles going,
mm-hmm.
So whoever had some time, didn't mm-hmm. know what to do,
mm-hmm.
would go work on a puzzle or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I think all in all, the young nurses did exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
I had only one problem, and it wasn't with a young nurse. It was with her husband, who was a civilian.
Uh-huh. And how did he end up in Vietnam?
He wasn't in Vietnam, but he kept writing his congressman, saying, that his wife should not be in a place like that, where
uh-huh.
they were getting mortared, and we had so many congressionals. We finally transferred her out to a place that was a little safer. We sent her up to the third field, I think, in up north there, and she didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to stay with the people that she'd been working with, but her husband had just created so many problems that
mm-hmm.
in order to get him off our backs, we had to transfer her out.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, there just weren't any problems with
mm-hmm.
these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did you have any male nurses?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Several nurse anesthetists, male nurse anesthetists, and a couple of med-surg
mm-hmm.
nurses, and
mm-hmm.
no problems with the male nurses either.
Mm-hmm. Were they about the same age, or were they older than the student nurses?
Most of the male nurses were a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them had quite a bit of civilian experience before they came into the military.
Uh-huh.
But, no, I didn't really have any of the real young
uh-huh.
male nurses.
Uh-huh. And did they kind of hang out with all of you too? Were you all in one group, or did they?
Well, of course, they lived in the same quarters where the doctors and the MSC officers lived. But of course, we all ate in the same mess hall, and we did have a little room that was called an officers' club, and we met there once in a while. But actually, most of the time, we were too busy to do too much socializing, or too tired to do it. So. Like I said, our big entertainment was listening to the tapes. So somebody would get a tape, and then they would share it. They would make a copy of it, you know, and pass it around. And but that was mostly what our entertainment was.
And how long were you at this hospital?
A year.
So you were there 21 months total,
21
right?
21 months, yes. By choice. By choice.
So when it came up to your 1 year that you'd been in Vietnam, did you say, I want to stay longer?
Well, when they closed the hospital, the 18th Surge, I had an interview with the chief nurse of Vietnam, and she asked me where would I might like to go to finish my tour up, because I just had a short time left before I Gerald's, and I said, well, I would like to go to a must unit, and I'd be willing to stay another year if I could, you know, do that. So she said, well, they just happened to have a space opening up in December for a chief nurse down at the 3rd Surge, which was a must unit. And so I was assigned down there, and that's why I stayed the extra time.
And why did you want to go to the must unit?
Just for the experience. It was something new. And I liked the surgical hospital because I liked the activity, you know, all the casualties coming in. And I just wanted more experience in that setting.
It was something new.
Yes.
They were new for Vietnam, right?
The bus
were.
Yeah.
And so did they send you on an R&R somewhere?
No, I didn't go on R&R. No, I really didn't want to leave at that point. I just wanted to keep going. So, no, and I just saved all my leave time and requested a 30-day delay en route in Hawaii on my way home from Vietnam. And it was granted. So I stopped in Hawaii on the way home. And had my parents come over and rented an apartment, and spent a month there on my way back.
So, do you think that was helpful coming back? Was it kind of downtime?
Yes. Oh, very much. So yeah, time to relax and while you're there in Vietnam. You see all the casualties and all the wounded, all the dead, and it doesn't really hit you until after you're gone because you're so busy taking care of them and preparing to take care of the next group that comes in. So you don't think too much about it. It's sad, but you don't dwell on it. But after you leave, then it kind of hits you. So taking some time off is a good idea. But I had a lot of friends in Hawaii because I'd spent 5 years there before. So that was a good place to go, to just wind down a little bit. So I was ready to go back to work by that time, by the time I left there. And I went back to OB. I went to Fort Gordon, Georgia, and was only there a few months, and they needed a chief nurse down at Hunter Army Airfield in Savannah. The chief nurse there suddenly decided to retire, so I got assigned down there, so then I was chief nurse of that hospital. And it was a small hospital. It had been an Air Force hospital at one time. Now it was an Army helicopter base. And it was not too far from Fort Stewart, Georgia, and that was an old post, an old hospital. And this little hospital was fairly new, fairly modern.
Mm-hmm.
And we did all the surgery for everybody in the area. So Fort Stewart wasn't doing any surgery at that time. They sent all their patients up to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we were quite busy.
Mm-hmm.
And we were renovating the hospital at that time too, and that was interesting. They were going to have a dedication. So getting ready for that was
mm-hmm.
was big, you know, ordering new equipment and painting and all that sort of thing was
uh-huh.
was something we were all involved in. And and then one time Nixon was supposed to land at our place,
uh-huh.
President Nixon, and they said, well, he's not going to stop at the hospital at all. Mm-hmm. He's just getting off the plane, and they'll put him in a limo, and away he'll go. And I said, well, that's not going to happen. So I got all the patients who were at least ambulatory or in wheelchairs, and even some on gurneys, and I lined the streets. And Nixon came by. He could not pass them up.
Uh-huh.
He stopped and talked to all those men.
Uh-huh.
Because we were still getting in wounded from Vietnam at that time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so he did stop and talk to all those patients along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite an experience, too.
I imagine.
Yeah. I was there about 2 years and got orders for Germany.
Uh-huh.
I was going to be the chief nurse at Landstuhl, Second General Hospital
mm-hmm.
in Germany. So I went there. That was a good-sized hospital. I think it was 1,000 beds, but we only were operating about 300 at that time.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay. Yeah, so that was in Germany.
Yes, uh-huh. And it was one of the big medical centers and the neurosurgical center. We had the neurosurgeons at our hospital there.
Uh-huh.
And we took care of a lot of dependents and
So did you get to work in OB there?
No.
But you were chief nurse.
I was the chief
so
nurse there.
So you had to do it all.
So, yeah, that was quite an experience, too.
Uh-huh.
It was an older hospital,
uh-huh.
and some of the things were still from the original time that it was made into a hospital.
Uh-huh.
So doing some renovation was part of the job there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't take care of wounded or anything like that. We weren't getting any casualties from Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
It was mostly dependent care,
uh-huh.
Sick military personnel.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, we did get a patient in who was a German lady, oh my goodness, from one of the famous German families.
Mm-hmm.
That had been in munitions in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, the name escapes me right now.
Uh-huh.
But rarely did we take any civilians in,
uh-huh.
just special cases
uh-huh.
like that. Mostly a lot of dependents
mm-hmm.
from all over Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And they backed them in from Italy sometimes too,
mm-hmm.
because we were a big medical center.
Mm-hmm.
And so. I spent 2 years at that hospital,
mm-hmm.
and then my father was terminally ill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was very ill. We didn't know, you know, how long he had cancer, and so I requested to go back to obstetrics when I left there
mm-hmm.
because I didn't know how long I'd be able to stay,
mm-hmm.
and I felt that it would be easier for me to leave obstetrics than to leave some administrative
right.
job.
Right.
So I did get back into OB going to William Beaumont
mm-hmm.
Army Medical Center in El Paso, Texas, and
mm-hmm.
I was maternal and child health care supervisor at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my father at that time was terminal. My mother was ill. So I had just better retire.
Mm-hmm.
So I retired in 1975.
Mm-hmm. And how many years did you have?
I had 24. And I went back home to take care of my family.
Uh-huh. Getting back in practical nursing, I guess.
Well, you know, it,
but it's,
there wasn't a lot of nursing, as a matter of fact. Even though I still subscribe to the journals, mm-hmm. without hands-on type of care, I mean, you can't keep up. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was up there a year, and my father died, and I then moved to San Antonio. Mm-hmm. But my mother was not well. So in 1980, I moved back to Michigan for 4 years and took care of her. Mm-hmm. And by that time, I couldn't have gone to work in the hospital again. I was just mm-hmm. so far behind. Uh-huh. So I decided that I would just do volunteer type work, and uh-huh. I started working with the Army Medical Museum. Uh-huh. And in fact, I started doing that in 1978, before the museum was built, when we were soliciting funds. Uh-huh. And I'm still working there.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So I was on the executive board for a while, uh-huh. and now I'm still on the board of directors, and I work as a volunteer in the gift shop. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so your Army retirement was enough to live on?
Oh, yes.
Get you what? Get you through.
Yes, I live comfortably on that. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I live in the Army Residence Community in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. It's a retirement community. Uh-huh. I moved there about 8 months ago. Uh-huh. And met a lot of old friends. Uh-huh. That live there. People have moved from all over into that community.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So you literally saw the entire world.
Well, I did quite. Yes, I did quite a bit of
career.
Traveling. Yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What was the best assignment you had? Or what was your favorite assignment?
Oh my goodness. Actually, I found something wonderful in every assignment I have, you know, in different aspects, professionally in some uh-huh. assignments, and personally, you know, in other assignments. And uh-huh. There wasn't an assignment that I didn't enjoy, that I didn't find something uh-huh. good about.
Uh-huh. So that's good to say.
Yeah. Actually, professionally, as far as obstetrics went, when I was in Hawaii at Tripler, mm-hmm. was the best time because I was so busy. Uh-huh. It was a very busy obstetric department. Uh-huh. And I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So.
Did you ever give any thought to the women's movements in the 60s when all of that started to come about?
Not a lot. Mm-hmm. I was in Vietnam 67 and 68. Mm-hmm. And didn't pay any attention to, mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't have TV or anything like that, so right. we didn't hear a whole lot of what was going on uh-huh. back in the States. Uh-huh. And, no, I never really got too involved in anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about being a woman in the military? You know, now you hear a lot about women in the military and
I know, but
and issues. Did you think about any of that? Have any
that.
Problems? Or?
I never had any problems. Mm-hmm. Never. No type of harassment that I recall at all. Uh-huh. In fact, I think the nurses were very well respected. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because we were nurses, mm-hmm. and you know, people did have a lot of respect for nurses back in those days. Mm-hmm. But I've remarked a number of times, you know, that the enlisted people never made an off-color remark, never used bad language around the nurses. I mm-hmm. never heard. Maybe in their barracks they used it.
But not around you?
No, not around the women at all. Mm-hmm. And we had enlisted women working with us too, you know.
Uh-huh. And did they get the same kind of treatment?
At least on duty. Mm-hmm. And I don't ever remember anybody reporting to me that they were being harassed, mm-hmm. and we had a lot of females working in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was going on, but to my knowledge, mm-hmm. I don't know of anyone who encountered yeah. any problems like yeah. that. Huh. And even in Vietnam, when I've read a lot of the stories that people have written about Vietnam, uh-huh. but as far as in the units that I was with, there wasn't any problem. I never had to deal with any problems like that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What do you think about some of the books that have been written about nursing in Vietnam?
Well, I think that a lot of the people who wrote some of these books and who talked about all the problems they had and that they saw in Vietnam, I think these people had problems before they ever went to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there were several books that we even refused to sell in our bookshop at the medical museum.
Uh-huh.
Of course, we read everything before mm-hmm. we put anything up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one book in particular, Home Before Morning,
mm-hmm.
that they were even going to make a movie about.
Mm-hmm.
And the Army nurses wrote to Sally Field, who was supposed to play the lead in that book,
mm-hmm.
and just told her, you know, what they thought about the book.
Mm-hmm.
And they stopped the movie. It was never made.
Mm-hmm.
And we never sold the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I know people who knew some of these nurses who wrote some of these books, and they said they were problems
mm-hmm.
from the time they got there, and they know that they had problems before they ever went to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the four hospitals that I worked at when I was in Vietnam, I don't recall anybody being unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
They were there to work, and that's what they did. They mm-hmm. took care of the patients the best they could.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody complained.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have problems with substance abuse or?
Not at the time I was there.
That mostly was later.
I think it was later when things quieted down and people didn't have enough work to do,
mm-hmm.
then they maybe got into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that even with the drug abuse, that most of these people were into it before they ever got there.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever have, you know, you hear about some people having problems with flashbacks or nightmares or, you know, PTSD. Did you ever have any of that?
No. I do find it difficult sometimes to watch movies
mm-hmm.
about war.
Mm-hmm. Any war
yeah.
or just Vietnam?
Any war,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But other than that,
mm-hmm.
No problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think anybody who was there, you know, they don't want to see it over again.
Right.
So, but I don't really have a lot of problems talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I never really did.
Mm-hmm. Because you always talk to your parents or your family about
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Kind of open about it?
Yeah, I think I was pretty open about it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did you think about the war, you know, and the controversy about the war, the protests?
Well, not when I was there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we didn't know what was going on
uh-huh.
at that time.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, when I came back, well, I was pretty disgusted
mm-hmm.
with the people. At that time, everything was so fresh in my mind, you know, and about how many were wounded and this sort of thing. And I just thought, oh, you know, how terrible that these people would think this way and would talk
mm-hmm.
this way when people are over there losing their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so.
Mm-hmm.
But we heard nothing much about that while we were there.
Mm-hmm. Well, was there anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about?
Oh gosh, I think we've just about covered.
Mm-hmm. You went a lot of places.
Yes, well.
You've been all around.
Yeah, in 24 years you go to quite a few different places.
Uh-huh.
I mean, most of the time you spent maybe 2 years
uh-huh.
at a place. Now people spend longer than
uh-huh.
that in one place.
Uh-huh.
But when I was in, you moved around quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you did make lasting friendships.
Uh-huh.
Of course, most of the time people were not married and had children, or have children, you
uh-huh.
see. And so their whole life was the Army.
Uh-huh.
And for many years, people lived in nurses' quarters,
mm-hmm.
and they think how terrible, but it wasn't terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have friends that I met when I first came in the Army in 1951. And I've kept in touch with. And at that time, when you were working in the hospital and you knew people pretty well, I think there was more cooperation. For instance, if my corpsman and the nurses that I worked with on a particular ward got finished taking care of all their patients, they would call up their friend down on the next ward and say, gosh, we're all done. Do you need some help down there? And that's the way we did things. My goodness, nowadays people don't know each other. It's a job. It's not a way of life for people anymore in the Army. The women have families, so they get off duty and they go home to their families. And they may not know the person that works on the next ward or the ward below them. It's just a 9-to-5 job or whatever hours they work. It's not a way of life anymore. And in a way, that's kind of sad. And that's really how this organization that I belong to, the Army Nurse Corps Association, got started. It was originally a retired Army Nurse Corps Association, and it was to keep up, you know, with your old friends. That was one of the main reasons, and also education. We support, you know, scholarships for people in nursing, that sort of thing. But the big reason was social, to keep up with people. And you'll notice we have a lot of World War II people here. Of course, they're a dying breed now. And we find that our organization is not what it used to be. Because so many of the old people are not around anymore. And we're working hard to try to get the younger people interested in maintaining the organization. But it's hard because they have so many other interests, you know, like children, grandchildren, things like that. But there are a lot of good things about modern nursing and about the modern Army, but I think we've lost something in that people